You're listening to this week's excerpt from the Dear Prudence podcast. To get the full-length members-only version every week, join Slate Plus at slate.com/prudypod.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence. Do you think that I should contact him again?
Help.
Help.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Hello, and welcome back to Dear Prudence. We have a very special show today. It's our first ever live show. This was recorded on Thursday, January 25th at the Brava Theater in San Francisco, where I was joined on stage by two of my best friends and favorite people in the whole world. First, Nicole Cliff, a writer and advice columnist whose work has appeared in Slate, The Guardian, Elle, New York Magazine. She and I also co-created the website The Toast together. She now co-writes Slate's new parenting advice column, Care and Feeding. Next up is Jasmine Guillory, a lawyer and writer who lives in Oakland. Her debut novel, The Wedding Date, is out this week. All right, here's the show.
Oh, hello. This is very exciting. Welcome to the very first Dear Prudence live show. I'm your host, Dear Prudence, also known as Mallory Ortberg. I say that on the show. Hi, you guys.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm so excited to see all of your faces and to see your faces more. I don't want to brag, but I do want to start by letting you all know that as of this afternoon, I am now officially qualified to give parenting advice. I spent easily 30 to 35 minutes unchaperoned with Nicole's baby in a hotel room.
Can I just say, this is my first time out without the baby today. So I was worried.
I think, especially because we have a fun little story about, when did this happen? Was this a week after you gave birth to your darling third child, Loretta? Sometimes Nicole will talk about people that I don't know. And I tend to respond in a form of like playful aggression, sort of like, what the hell is this that you're trying to talk to me about? And perhaps a week after she had given birth, Nicole texted me. Did you text me and others? Was it a group
just
thread?
Just you.
Just me, just myself, just me. Her best friend. And said, Loretta's really been acting up today. And I said, who the fuck is Loretta? And I want you guys to know, I was not being playful. It wasn't a callback. I had no idea who she was talking about. Is this a house guest? Is this a neighbor? Like, you need to give me context clues.
I had narrated the natural birth of Loretta for approximately the amount of time it took to give birth to Loretta. Maybe 3 days.
We texted a lot during. I didn't think of her as something that acted up yet. I'm so glad that you are both here giving advice. You guys have both been on the show.
Yes.
And you have both given the best advice, which is why the two of you are here. It is completely unbiased, just the best two advice columnists that I also happen to call my best friends and started a business with.
That's right. And Jasmine is really good for real jobs because I worked at a hedge fund, but apart from that, it's just new media. Which is
not a
you know,
job.
This is a very online crowd.
I worked at Yelp for 3 weeks once.
So I did a reference call for Mal for Yelp, and they were talking about Mal, and they were like, is there anything else you'd like to say? And I said, well, you should offer Mal the job, but if I ever start something, I'll immediately hire Mal, and Mal will quit. 3 weeks later.
The second week I took a vacation that had been previously scheduled and I could not get out of. And the third week I quit when my boss took me out to get frozen yogurt to ask how I was settling in. So I want you guys to know we're going to answer a couple of questions that I have culled from the inbox. And I have gone back into the depths of the inbox, by the way. I was like searching key terms that I knew were going to turn up like exciting prospects. I searched the term cruise because I was just like, I bet weird things happen on cruises. And I was 100% right. And then afterwards, we're going to take a little time to answer some of the questions that you, the good people of the Brava Theater, might have. And then we're going to release you all into the night, and that's going to be the end of it, and it will be over. You'll have to go home. But that's not now. That's that moment has not yet arrived. For this brief, beautiful moment, you're here with us. I'm really excited. Who's going to be like the contrarian tonight? Who's going to fight? It's going to be you. So you guys are going to be united, and I'm going to be the one just.
Jasmine is the most appropriate of us, I would say. I am a real sucker. I saw Passengers for the first time like 4 days ago, and I thought it was very romantic. I sure would have been fine with being woken up by someone so good-looking who liked my writing.
You're allowed to wake me up. I mean, we had a whole subsequent conversation. Like, you can wake me up, 100%. But then I'm waking everybody up. Like, none of this, like, quietly suffering while everyone else naps for 90 years. Like, you're all waking up, and then we'll all panic and figure out a solution.
None of you should wake anybody up.
Jasmine's not even getting on this generation ship.
No, I'm not.
Jasmine's like, I live on the Earth.
No space.
No.
Yeah, but you're space a sucker, except for every once in a while, you come out swinging and it's beautiful. Every once in a while. And then I'm just going to go with whatever it is, I'm against it. I'm just going to bring a real Groucho Marx energy to this whole operation.
Right. Fantastic.
So I'm going to start. The producer very kindly printed these out for us, which was very nice, because when I showed up tonight, they said, did you print out the questions? And I said, was I supposed to? And they said, we did not ask you to. And I said, then I did not. So this first question, they don't have subjects. I'm so used to, like, on the podcast, like, I do the subject first. So this has lost its sea. So as you can probably tell, this is one of the ones that showed up when I wrote cruise in the search box. Dear Prudence, years ago, I worked on a cruise ship and dated a fellow coworker who told me that he was divorced and had a child. I cared for him deeply, but he turned out to be an alcoholic, drug-abusing, cheating liar. We only dated for 4 months, but in cruise ship world, that feels like a year. Despite all the awful things he did, I loved him and saw the good in him. His problems ran deeper than just poor choices. He came from an abusive family, went to a reform school where he was badly treated, and I felt like I could help save him. It got to the point where he was drinking so much that I had to force him to wake up, help him get dressed, and make sure he did his job every day. After he cheated on me and I begged him to make it work, we broke up. Fast forward to this year. Through a lot of therapy and time, I'd forgiven him and myself and realized that I wouldn't have been able to help him because he didn't want to help himself. He contacted me by Facebook and apologized for how he treated me recently. I accepted the apology, and from our multiple conversations since then, I believed he was doing well, was sober, and was back with his ex-wife and child. About a month ago, I found out from his Facebook page that he'd died. Even after I directly asked the person who seemed to know the most, no one would say how other than health problems. Another friend made a cryptic post about how the details weren't important and that we needed to pray for his family. I've been obsessively Googling his name because I have a sick feeling that it wasn't health problems like they said. The people in his life now have no idea who I am or what we went through together. I also have no way of knowing if he was really divorced at the time we dated. And I have no desire to stir the pot with his ex-wife or wife by saying, I love this man, please tell me what happened. But I'm going nuts not knowing if it was an overdose, a suicide, or a freak accident. Is there a respectful way to ask someone to tell me what happened? Or am I going to have to accept that I may never know? Does anyone think there's a respectful way to ask?
No.
No. No.
No, I was thinking over that too, because I am a naturally inquisitive person. If this was somebody that I had dated, no matter how long ago it was, you know, I can relate to the idea of wanting to know the details, even if there wasn't anything that I could do to help. But if someone does not give you details about how someone died, there's no polite way to ask for the details because it's not a polite thing to do. So what do we, so no, don't ask. No, we got that. We all agreed. We all agreed you don't ask. Mm-hmm. I think we're also agreed, definitely don't tell his wife. Like, no. Hey, we were involved 8 years ago on a cruise. Was that okay with you?
It was a cruise thing.
It was cruise ship world.
Very serious.
Was it cruise ship world or cruise ship land? It couldn't be land. It's on a ship. I did want to ask a lot of questions about, like, what are the rules of, like, working
cruise
on a cruise
world.
Ship?
Yeah.
So don't ask anybody.
No.
I get it. It's painful if someone that you used to date died. I don't want to be totally, like, harsh on this letter writer, but, you know, sometimes the answer to feeling, like, curious and frustrated is just you get to feel curious and frustrated.
Also, it's not going to make any difference why he died or what happened. He's dead now. Like, the time is to...
You didn't get closure.
It happened
suddenly. You didn't get time to prepare. That's just painful. If it's really hard... God, what do we make, like 5 minutes before I start plugging therapy? Yeah. Go to therapy.
Yeah,
go to therapy. She does need to go to therapy.
Yeah, I think a therapist would be a great person because a therapist is presumably someone that you can say a lot of stuff to that you can't say other things to. And you could say, like, I really want to, like, do this nutty thing. I want to call his wife. I want everyone to know how important we were to each other. I felt like I helped get him sober. And if he, you know, wasn't sober when he died, I'll feel like that was somehow, like, a negation of the work I tried to do. And what does this mean about me?
And also, she clearly already went to therapy and did some real good work with that.
Yes.
Go back.
Yeah, it worked before. It'll work again.
And just maybe sit for a month or two and see if you still have feelings of quite this intensity around it, because death is just, like, you know, a big deal for people. And if 3 months down the road you just are no longer as passionately, like, upset and curious, you might just be able to wander off.
Yeah, I would say too, spend some time off of Facebook. Right, like, because Facebook was how you guys reconnected. Facebook was how you found out he died. You've already been doing a lot of obsessive Googling. You know, Facebook is probably a place that you could easily spend, like, 3 hours a night, like, combing through everything somebody says, looking for, like, keywords to try to guess.
I spend a lot of time on Reddit, particularly the legal advice forum, the very superior personal finance forum, and the relationships forum. And I search things like cat, hygiene. It's great. But there's a phrase that people use in Reddit relationships, which is lawyer up, delete Facebook, hit the gym. And it's really good advice.
Just, like, always together? Like, you never do one?
Always together.
You can't go to the gym without getting a lawyer?
No. I'm so ready to hide bitcoins from a woman now. They laughed at you. They'll laugh now.
I just need a minute. I wasn't prepared for that one. But yeah, that's great. So yeah, sure, get a lawyer. It's never bad to have a lawyer, I guess. Certainly, if not delete Facebook, at least, you know, leave it alone for 30 days. Like, just give it a miss.
Stop Googling his name.
Yeah, stop Googling his name. Set up a Google alert for his name.
Don't set up a Google alert for his name.
There are some people that I need to keep tabs on from a distance. And I have an amount of Google alerts that I have set up that they just email me either every 3 months or if the person's name comes up in the news.
Have a friend set up a Google alert in his name, and then your friend can tell you. Your
Mal
friend
has
can
mine.
Update you.
You are my wisest friend.
When things are important enough.
I thought you were going to come down so hard on me, like, that's just wrong. You're like, no, make a friend do it, because they won't be invested.
Yes.
That's genius. Get a friend to have a Google alert for the name every 3 to 6 months, and then just say, you tell me if anything comes up, so that you don't have to go check in.
Mal and I, both professional advice columnists, read each other's emails sometimes when we're too scared to open them.
Oh, 100%. I sometimes get an email, and based on the subject line or how quickly it is sent after I sent the first email, write to Nicole. Tell me what it says, because my threshold for personal discomfort is, like, yay high.
I know what to say in those.
You always know what to
say.
I'm
like, it's not bad. Mm-hmm. It's not fantastic.
Yes.
And then just slowly doula you through it.
You do a beautiful job. Would you doula us through this next letter?
I would.
By reading it. I had to close my eyes. I hated myself so much for saying that.
All right. Dear Prudence, Our family is a mom and dad with three grown-up kids here in the upper Midwest, which I'm led to believe is Michigan.
Maybe Minnesota.
Maybe. And we're about as problem-free and loving as any family out there. I'm writing because of my wonderful brother, Adam, whom I've long suspected is gay, but we're too upper Midwestern and Lutheran, it was Minnesota. To ask and risk violating his privacy, which is clearly important to him, any questions about his private life are expertly deflected, and he describes himself as, quote-unquote, perpetually single. He is not. I came into contact with a friend of a friend of a friend of his. The brother. And he revealed himself to be Facebook friends with Adam. He had a laptop handy and offered me a chance to see his Facebook page, something he not long ago denied having. It was sudden, and I could not resist the chance. As it turns out, he's been in a years-long relationship with a man who is kind, industrious, and well-loved by their many Facebook friends. He's also the most stunningly handsome man I've ever seen pictures of. They have been to dozens of events together, including a European cruise. He did not mention to any of us, and they really do look like the perfect couple. I may be concocting a problem where there really is none, but I'm heartbroken Adam can't seem to be able to share this part of his life with the rest of us. I really think all our lives would be better if he could. None of us, including our parents, have anything remotely negative to say about gay people, and Adam's partner would quickly be welcomed and loved by our family. So what to do? Nothing? I'm terrified of violating my brother's privacy and have no idea how he'd react. The rest of our family may suspect he's gay. It's been years since anyone even approached the topic, but have no clue he's in a storybook romance.
So we're all picturing Cary Grant and Randolph Scott, right?
Yeah. Aren't
like,
we always?
From perpetually single to they've been on a European cruise. Like, you guys know the pictures. You guys know that Cary Grant and Randolph Scott dated, yes? Great, fantastic. I'd be very upset.
It's a good town.
But there's that great photo spread of the two of them sitting on their like diving board that they shared in their beautiful home. That's what I'm imagining on all their Facebook pictures. It's just to set the scene.
So we were talking about this question with your mother in the hotel room, who's now looking after the baby. She's probably better. than
she
me.
She probably is.
Than
she,
me.
She probably is.
She and I were both immediately on the sucker family side of
totally.
Well, you've got to find a way to talk to him. Family is all we have in this life.
And I said, if your brother hasn't told you already that he is gay, there's probably a reason, and maybe he doesn't want to tell you.
I think part of the clue there is it's been years since anyone talked about it, which... You know, sometimes people will say, we don't, like in the letter, it said, we don't have anything bad to say about gay people. And that's great. Good place to start. Wonderful. Full marks. Sometimes, though, if you don't say anything, given that the sort of like net message one gets just from being a person who goes outside and lives in the world, if it, on the one hand, you hear all the bad things that people say about being gay all the time, and from your family, you hear nothing, you default to assuming they have nothing to add to that conversation. They have no corrections they want to make. They don't want to, you know, encourage anything. This is an off-topic conversation. This is not welcome here. You know, it's not a warm, inviting silence that makes you feel real safe, like a big old cocoon. I think... there's probably a reason that he's denied having a Facebook. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's not something that somebody just says, like, by the way, I deny having Facebook. You deny it when you get asked a lot. And you look like you want to say something.
So, by the way, I deleted Facebook, which I would love to tell everyone all the time. Only thing I've ever stepped away from. And it's real bad now. I use my mom's account sometimes. Rural Southern Ontario Facebook. It's not great. But Mal, do you think it's possible for the letter writer to say something along the lines of, is there any chance that you have someone like special in your life?
We
could talk about.
I definitely don't think that they should just go to, like, with the status quo of just like, let's continue not to say anything and hope that someday he feels like welcome. Because of course,
you know, if it's your family member and you do want to know more about them and you do feel close, I think the key is not so much to say, hey, I've like, you know, found your Facebook anyways through a friend of a friend of a friend, and I want to kind of corner you because I want something from you, which again, I understand that it's really well-meaning, but probably he has not hidden this really lightly from you. It probably wasn't just like a fun, whimsical idea he had one day. So I think rather than kind of like pushing towards, I know this, I need to sort of gently intimate that I know this until you confess, which, you know, I totally get that, but like sometimes being loved feels like knowing a lot of Spanish inquisitors, you know, who have like blunted all the instruments, but they're still there. And that's maybe not an accurate read on what love is, but it it can feel that way. My read on this would be something more along the lines of like, hey, I feel like I have not communicated effectively to you that I love you so much. I'd love to know more about your life. I don't want to make assumptions, and I don't want to like tell you anything about your life. If you are gay, that is not only fine with me. I would love to know whatever you felt comfortable sharing with me about your life. And if that's nothing right now, I just want you to know that I totally respect that. But I haven't said this enough, maybe. I haven't made it really clear that if that's going on, not only would I love and support you, I'd be excited for you. And I would not like share that with the other members of the family. Because sometimes there's that element too of like, maybe your sibling would like to tell you, but has this sense of like, you might immediately tell everybody else.
And I think this letter writer would also.
Yes.
Yeah, and again, like, think about it.
I don't think this letter writer is like a jerk. Like, I think this letter writer genuinely has really good intentions and really loves their brother and doesn't really have a clue why he would feel this anxious, circumspect, hasn't chosen to share this before. And so I think the letter writer's best next move is to spend a lot of time imagining what her brother might be thinking and feeling. Not assuming that you know, but like spend a lot of time thinking about the ways in which his life has been really different from yours. Think about the reasons why he might make those choices. Try to figure out how you can, you know, invite him to share more with you while also respecting them and not unmaking those choices for him. Because I got to tell you, even if you do it in the most like exciting, supportive, and lovable way, if you say, I found your Facebook, I told mom and dad, we all know you're gay now. Don't worry, it's great. He is not going to be happy that you did that. It's not going to feel good.
I think we're good on this one. Yeah. I think we all convinced me as to what we should do.
Yeah, and you know, like the good news is you found out something kind of great, which does not usually happen when you look at somebody's Facebook. That they
like,
told
I found
you.
Out a secret about my brother. He's so happy.
Yeah. Yeah, and of course, there's a pain to that of like, I wish he could share that with me, but it's just like, well, you can't make him. You got to create the space for it.
His husband is the best looking man that the letter writer has ever seen. The first thing I thought of is Victor Garber's husband, who is the best looking man.
Remember when we all found out about that? In the world.
And it was great because Victor Garber was like, yeah, I like told you guys 10 years ago. And we were like, did you? Victor Garber? Were we just busy that day?
He's got like this shaggy mane of like graying wolf hair and has like, he's so handsome. He models. Like, it's, yeah.
Please just keep describing Victor Garber's husband for like 10 minutes.
I have a lot of Victor Garber material too, but I think Jasmine's gonna read our next question.
I do actually, before we finish, I got a text from a friend earlier today who understands my many, many complex feelings for Stanley Tucci. My friend thinks that she saw Stanley Tucci at a coffee shop today in the East Bay. So, if any of you saw Stanley Tucci today in the East Bay or like can confirm his whereabouts in a normal way, not like I know where he's at right now, but just like what part of the country he might be, that feels actually still not okay. I heard myself saying that out loud and I was just like, leave the Tucci alone.
I promise we did not plan in advance that I would be the one to read this question. Dear Prudence, my partner and I have been together for a few months. I am white, they are not. As we were discussing our high school experiences, I told them that I had gone to a very small evangelical school in a notoriously racist town with a nearly 100% white staff and student body. Our teachers taught us very hateful things about people of color, anyone LGBT, and members of other religions that never quite sat right with me. When I graduated and got into the real world, I realized how much I'd been lied to and worked hard to put that mindset behind me. It's been several decades since I graduated. When I told my partner about this, they were quiet for a while. I asked if they were okay, and they said yes. Now, though, they sometimes tease me about being a secret racist or joking that I don't like a particular person because of their race. I know I will never understand what it's like to be a person of color in America, especially right now, but this teasing hurts. When I've asked them if everything is okay and to please not say those things, they say they're fine but continue the teasing. I understand why they may not feel they can trust me after learning about my past. I didn't choose to learn those things, but I'm actively choosing to unlearn them every day. Should I try to talk to my partner again? How do I approach this sensitively and delicately?
Blanket answer is, whenever someone asks me, should I try to talk to my partner about this again, the answer is almost always yes.
Yes.
But there were a couple of things about it that left you kind of wondering some stuff.
Yes. I think I was, how exactly did it come up that they grew up super racist? Like, when I told my partner about this, what was it just, I went to this terrible high school, or was it like, also, I went to some white pride rallies, or, you know, like,
my
what
past.
Was your participation in the racist background that you grew up in? Because I think that informs a lot of what your partner may be thinking after hearing about your background.
I'm also surprised that it would be surprising for me if the letter writer was more intentionally like clouding the issue in a letter to an advice column than to the partner. Because we're just getting this the past thing, and I think definitely there would have been follow-up questions. There was one other line in this which bothered me, which was, when I told my partner about this, they were quiet for a while. Because, no, if that's just, they used to tell me things, I don't think that's a goes quiet
yeah.
for a while and then brings it up a bunch.
Yes, I have many questions about, like, what exactly you told your partner. And how did this come up? Like, did they never know where you grew up? Because if your town is a notoriously racist town, one of the first things you talk about with someone is where I grew up. Mm-hmm. And if someone found out, I mean, I don't know, I don't know what a notoriously racist town is.
Ebbing's, Missouri.
But wouldn't your partner like step back Topical. And think like, huh, that's interesting, let's talk about that? Or had this never come up in however long you'd been dating?
Right. I think the fact that there was a lot of silence followed by, hey, are you okay? And like, yes. And now they're making some jokes that are clearly expressing tension.
Yes.
Because like, I think part of what your partner is doing is testing, like, am I safe with you? Like, the reason that they're kind of saying, like, hey, is the reason you don't like this person because you are secretly racist? On some level, they're not sure. And they're kind of trying to figure that out. So yes, the definitely needs to be a follow-up conversation. And part of what we just don't know is, yeah, there was that bit of like, none of those things ever sat quite right with me. And then after I graduated, I tried to leave that behind me. And that could cover anything from like, I attended a school that like explicitly taught like religious hatred, racial prejudice, anti-LGBT animus. And then as soon as I got out of there, I like moved elsewhere, you know, became like an activist and did a lot of other stuff. Or it could mean like, I was raised in the Westboro Baptist Church and participated in like, you know, rallies, like protested abortion clinics, like, you know, did a number of things that would in fact be acutely painful to anyone who happens to like see them or be the target of them. So, you know, I think for the letter writer, the main thing is to kind of think through before they have that subsequent conversation of like, did I do anything other than simply as a child passively receive racist instruction? Because my guess is, you know, if you, letter writer, are white and you grew up in a like even more racist than usual town, probably there was more than just the passive reception, just because, you know, anyone who benefits from racism and white supremacy perpetuates it in various times in their life. So there's probably a little more to the story that's worth kind of thinking about before you bring it up. Because if you bring it up and it's fuzzy to your partner, and all you're asking your partner is, hey, will you stop making jokes because it's making me uncomfortable? You have, like, again, centered, you know, white comfort over your partner's, like, sense of safety in the relationship. And that would not be good.
And I feel like also how long has this relationship been going on? Like, have they
I think
never
a couple months, they said?
Yeah, because, I mean, I would feel like, oh, so I guess we're never going to meet the families at this point? Like, we're... I mean, I think the partner's feeling a lot of tension about what the future of this relationship is going to be like for them.
So my read, and tell me what you guys think, and, like, how to approach that conversation would be, like, to sit down and to say, hey, I want to talk about this again. I don't want to put you on the spot. It's clear that, like, you still have some unanswered questions, and I want you to know, like, I'm available to talk about those things. If there's anything you want me to explain further, if there's any other way that I can let you know ways in which I have meaningfully changed my life and attempted to make amends for whatever ways I, like, actively participated in that system, you know, what can I talk to you about that would be helpful to you? And that way it kind of doesn't put the onus on your partner of, like, you have to stop making these jokes, because I think the more important thing is the knowledge gap. Anything else to put in there?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think you have to sort of take some, maybe apologize for how you brought it up in the first place. Because I feel like the first conversation clearly did not go well.
Right.
And I think the letter writer does not realize that and only is worried about the jokes, whereas the issue is more that there needs to be a lot more talking.
Yeah. And that's good. That's a really specific thing, because you can kind of say, we talked about it, you got quiet, and I just let that go. And I shouldn't have done that. I should have done more thinking about how I could bring that up with you. I should have taken into consideration your feelings and your sense of safety. And I did not do a good enough job in that moment of taking care of you and of being, like, thoughtful about how I brought up this topic with you. Because this is, you know, apparently big enough that you're going to need to, like, kind of bring it up in most of your important relationships throughout your life. So it's, I think it's good to do a lot of work, not just of, like, here's how I've left it behind me, but also here's how I carry it with me. Because it is a part of your life and a part of your story. And as much as, you know, any of us might like to leave something behind that makes us not think well of ourselves, or that reminds us that we've participated in a harmful power imbalance, other people do not have the option of leaving that stuff behind them if they're affected by it.
And the family structure, I think, is so, so important. Are they still attending this church? Are you still in contact with them in a big way?
Right.
How
is it the sort of thing of
this?
Like, I'm great now, but all my relatives are incredibly racist,
yeah.
So please
don't
ever be around if I'm on the phone with them.
Yeah.
Like, that would be... And we laugh, but
come
like,
home
that
for
happens.
Christmas with me, though. I'm sure it'll be great. Yeah.
Everyone loves the holidays.
Yeah, yeah. No, and I just... I want to know what town it was.
Yeah, really want to know what town it was. Dear Prudence, I just listened to the second episode in recent memory where you have referenced having a meal that consists solely of eating peanut butter from a jar. I'm a little concerned for you. Is Slate not paying you enough to provide a square meal? What can we, your loyal listeners and readers who wish for you a lifestyle that includes satisfying meals, do to help? Or is there really just something so lovely about a meal of peanut butter that I am missing?
Look. I think if we've learned anything tonight, it's that my strengths lie in having a lot of feelings, talking about my feelings, end of list. I don't plan great. Sometimes we schedule a couple of episodes to be recorded in a row, and I have other jobs, so I sometimes schedule them all in a row. And as I'm leaving the house, I remember all of my work is today. I have no food and no time. And you ever tried to grab just like one food that's going to keep you going for several hours? Jar of peanut butter fits right in your hand.
I actually distinctly remember one time you tweeted that you grabbed a jar of peanut butter but had not grabbed a spoon and was trying to figure out how to eat peanut butter in public without a spoon.
Yeah, like with an old Diners Club card.
The worst part was, so I record at UC Berkeley in the journalism... In the journalism department, and they have a little courtyard area. And so I went there with my little sad backpack full of peanut butter, feeling fine about it. Like, I was happy with my choice. Later that day, I ate falafel. I'm fine. Slate has a union now. They pay me great.
Union. Congratulations.
Union. But I went to the courtyard with the express intent of, I have no spoon, there's no utensils here. I'm going to wait till the courtyard clears out because there's only two people here and they look like they're about to finish up their meal. And I'm going to either eat it with my lighter, because I quit smoking this year, but I still have a bunch of lighters lying around, or one of my movie theater rewards cards. And I was fine with my choice. I just didn't want anyone to see me do it. And so I wait, and like right before those other people leave, a group of attractive young French people. Like, I'm not kidding you, speaking French. You know how French sounds, like ballet. Like, they swan in with these big bowls. Like, they're carrying bowls in their hands. Like background for like Tess of the D'Urbervilles, like before it all goes wrong, when they're still eating strawberries to represent sensuality. And they have big bowls of like salads and like a roast chicken, and they like come over to me and they say in beautiful Frenchy English, like, do you mind if we sit down at this picnic table right next to you? And I'm like, I would love that. And so they all surround me, and it's like one of those, it's like Bilbo Baggins' birthday. And I just sit there and I know, like, I don't have the stones. I'm just gonna sit there next to their beautiful meal, like the little match girl, thinking about my jar of peanut butter, which is sitting in front of me.
Now, I think you would have given them the greatest gift that an American can give a European.
There's nothing that French people like more than to see Americans do very stupid-looking things.
I went on a real tear about Europeans on Twitter the other day. I'm not even American. But I was on a real tear about Europeans because someone informed me that their parents have like an exchange teen. And the teen said, oh, this is so exciting. I understand that Americans, when they're feeling sad, sometimes eat an entire pint of ice cream. Like, is that true? And I was just like, your washing machines are small. None of you have dryers. Your sinks are hot and cold, and the hot is extremely hot, and often you do not have the thing to mix it with, and who has that kind of time?
Okay, also, this is the worst thing about France especially.
Okay? Especially the
French. This is one of the things that I am the most fiercely patriotic about after the, you know, amendments.
We love
their
those.
Toilet paper is terrible.
Oh. It's
it is
pink.
Terrible. It's pink. It's
sandpaper.
It's like it's thin. It's awful.
I will wrap this up.
Their pastries are delicious.
I did just get the 5-minute warning from my producer, and I think we still have a question left to go. But I will say that the only time I've ever been to France, I was 12 years old. I ordered a ham sandwich and I cried because I thought the ham was raw because of how thin and pink it was. And then some teenagers on the steps of Versailles offered me a cigarette and I said no, and I felt very excited to get to say no to cigarettes. 4 years later, I started smoking. I only just quit by the skin of my teeth. I should have just said yes then and gotten like started earlier.
It makes you look so cool.
It does. They looked amazing. All right. Last question. Dear Prudence, I'm a 28-year-old divorcee. My husband and I separated a year and a half ago. Since then, I've had a few flings and tried dating apps, but haven't really seen anyone seriously. My husband and I had been together for nearly a decade, and divorce was truly wrenching for me. What's more, it was my fault. I had an affair that devastated him and caused him to end our marriage, and that's the most profound regret of my life. I hurt him for profoundly selfish reasons. I grieved for a long time, and in some ways, I'm still trying to put myself back together. A few months ago, my ex dropped off a bunch of books I'd left in the apartment we shared and helped me pick up a bookcase. Sometime later, he asked me to dinner, and we've been hooking up pretty consistently ever since. He often stays over. I love you guys. You're like a studio audience. I feel like I'm watching an old episode of Frasier. He often stays over, and he sometimes spends whole weekends with me. My feelings for him have been reignited, and I feel I love him as deeply as I ever did.
We're still so comfortable with each other, and I feel so loved when I'm with him. He holds my hand. I asked him once about getting back together, and somehow he wound up crying. Since then, I've...
Somehow.
Yeah, I hear it. I hear it now. Backstage, I was like, I think they might be able to get back together.
And Nicole she thought just, they should.
Nicole just looked at me like, no. Since then, I've just been trying to take it easy and enjoy his company. I think this is one of those questions that answers itself as I write about it. This is probably an unhealthy thing to be doing. But the thought of ending it and losing our gentle trysts... She said gentle trysts.
She did.
I mean, you should have been saying that before you cheated on him, but, you know.
Marriage is a sacred covenant.
And the sweet time we spend together makes me want to cry all over again. That being said, I also feel profound melancholy on the nights when I'm alone at not having someone to call my own and sleep next to. I want someone who wants to be with me every day. How can I get out of this situation without cracking?
I mean, look, you're going to crack.
You're already cracked. You are that. Cracked wide open. My gentle friend, you are a mess. And I say that with love, like you are devastated all the time.
All
you
the
are
time.
Cracked.
I think this is one of those times when we suggest something that all three of us think is a great idea.
Therapy.
I'm sorry, I had water in my mouth. I missed the moment
we
all said
we
it
didn't
together.
Plan it.
Yeah. So therapy and stop seeing him.
Yeah.
Therapy
keep and
seeing
stop
him
seeing
until your
him.
Therapist makes you stop.
You need to go for no contact, which is a very good subreddit. No contact. And it's just like a bunch of people being like, I didn't do it today. I didn't do it today. And people being like, yeah, man, you didn't. And
Wait.
They want to real bad, but they support each other.
Hang on, though. So is no contact like one day you just stop taking his calls?
I think you should say something final,
okay.
Which is that this is deeply, deeply painful for you because you love them very much and you're always aware of how much you have hurt them by your own actions. And that is preventing you from moving on to the next phase of your life.
Is preventing both of you.
And that you are going to drop out of touch for a while. And then block, mute, probably mute, and just therapy and never speak to them again. As long as you live.
I think that's probably the wise choice. But they do both seem to be very much in love with each other. Every once in a while, somebody undivorces, and it's very charming. I'm not saying it's likely, but I think as you are ending it, it might be okay to say, I love you very much. I think we still both love one another. If there is any chance that you would like to try to actually date, possibly go to couples counseling together, see if there's any way we can get past the affair, and then if... You know, it's absolutely undoable. I would need to stop seeing you, which would be very sad, but ultimately for the best. But if you cried because you love me a lot and you're just afraid of trust, I sure don't want to cheat on you again. Don't say it like that.
Yeah. Also, this feels like a pretty recent breakup if he was still bringing books that she left. So maybe they just needed a...
It's like a year and a half after a decade together. That means they like got married when they were 18, which...
Yeah.
That's a whole nother like additional wrinkle, right? Like of course it's hard to let go of
yes.
this like representation of who you were as a young adult, but it doesn't seem.
It doesn't
I would
seem
put
like
the,
it's a good situation for either of them right now.
Yeah.
Why did she cheat? That's not something that the
no,
letter writer really goes into.
Because affairs are fun is what I hear in letters all the time. Affairs do not seem fun. Everyone who has them is bummed out.
Seriously about it. And you're going to get caught because of technology.
And also, keeping secrets is just very complicated.
Oof. So many little lies.
Yeah.
Big little lies, one might say.
Hey.
Good night, everybody. Oh, I'm so sorry I did that. Yes, okay. We're way past 5 minutes.
I do think Mal has talked me into shooting your shot one
shoot
last time.
Like, you've already gone through 6 months of, like, weepy sex. You might
one
as well
bad conversation.
Like, you might as well say... I still love you. If any part of you wants to try to make it work, I would be more than willing to do that.
But also, if he cries again, then it's time to cut it off.
Right.
What does your crying mean?
If you get anything less than an enthusiastic yes, if you get, like, just crying, that is your answer. Your answer is just, he's very sad.
You've broken him.
Yeah. You broke a perfectly nice person. You didn't break a person. You're a person, too. You made him sad. He has to go heal himself.
We should take questions from the audience.
Hello, audience.
I think we have somebody with a microphone who's going to run around and give it to you. Before we ask you all questions, I have a couple of requests for you when you ask us questions. I love you. I believe all of you are smart, caring, thoughtful people. Ask one question, not five. Make sure it's a question and not a statement. And we're going to make a woman go first because it's better when women start things. I think those are the only rules. Yeah, ask away. We will be helpful and kind.
Okay. So I have another work friend question. I'm a freelance video producer, and I have two friends who I work with a lot, and we give each other extra work when we have too much work to do ourselves. So these friends I give some work to, but they keep missing things, like they miss the deadlines, they don't check all of the resources I've sent. We talked about it. They said we'll be better, and then today they weren't better. So I know I need to give them less work, but I don't really know how to approach this. And I know they have a lot of things going on, like they just got engaged, they just moved, they might
be traveling. To each other?
Yes.
Oh, yes. No.
But I am their favorite third wheel, so.
We're just friends. Into, like, personal life, too.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
For starters, congratulations on being in video, which is still monetizable by all accounts. That's why you have extra work.
Yes.
So that's great.
Nicole, you've had a work friend who's not great with deadlines, often promises they'll get better, and doesn't. What worked for you?
I loved my work friend with all my heart, and everything my work friend does delights me. And sometimes Riley amuses me. That's probably not great in your situation. You have done the appropriate thing of talking about it. You have drawn their attention to it. It has happened again. Could you clarify a bit how much you need this work to be done that you cannot do?
I mean, I have other people I can give it to, and I've said that, and they said, oh, we still want this work. So I'm like, great, I'd rather give it to my friends. But
here's my question. Does it make you look bad when you refer people to them and then they don't get it done? Because that's my concern, is that you're going to then stop getting as much work. People are going to say, oh, well, I tried to call her, but then it didn't turn out well.
Well, it's more that they're subcontracting to me, and so it just puts more stress on me, or it makes me look bad.
Yeah, I think kind of the nice thing about this is it's a very clear, like, action item. Like, you don't have to make it about something like, I feel weird working with you, or you're not nice. You can just say, hey, deadlines are actually really important. You missed the last couple of deadlines. I'm taking this to somebody who delivers consistently. Sorry. It's been a long time since I had to use work words, so I don't know what it sounds like. But yeah, I think just like kind of like the deadlines are the bad guy, right? Like, this is just an objective reality that has to happen. And, you know, you can do the sort of like generic, like, hey, sorry about this, but, you know, obviously I need the work done on time. And if they are, you know, reasonable people, like, I have sometimes gotten emails like that, and I have always felt like my own petard, it hoist me. Like, I've never thought, like, oh, this is someone's being a jerk. I'm always like, oh, I can't believe I got away with it for so long.
Also, I feel like not everything has to be, like, a difficult conversation. Sometimes you can just refer the work to someone else. And it's not that you're keeping it a secret from them, but just, you know, if they ask, oh, well, I thought so-and-so would be great at this. You seem like you had a lot on your plate right now.
Such a good phrase.
That's a good phrase, but sometimes when you do that, people follow up with, well, just so you know, I'm very available now. And then you are in a corner.
And then you can say, next time I will call you.
Yeah. But then you don't. I think the best way is just to say, hey, I gave this project to someone else on account of deadlines. I know you've got a lot coming up. Enjoy your, you know, something nice about, like, I'm excited about your wedding. But just keep it light. Don't make it sound like you are apologizing for something that is very reasonable.
Don't apologize.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you do have to do the, like, one, like, how many sorries do you have to do, right? Like, just in talking to people, you have to have some sorries.
It's punctuation.
Right?
Canadians.
It's punctuation. Like, you say, hello, I'm sorry. Like, that's just, that's how you let people know you don't hate them.
I I was in this country for 10 years before I stopped saying sorry if someone else bumped into me on the street.
So my mom got me a Christmas present. She got me one of the DNA kits. And I'm not giving my genetic material to a corporation. So how do I respond when she asks me about it? And when I say, I'm not doing that, and she goes, oh, but I just thought it would be so much fun.
You know, there's some great, I agree with you, I don't like those DNA kits. They give your information to too many people. There's some great articles on the internet about why those are bad. Maybe if your mom is the kind
in the
of
history
person.
Of sending articles to your mom.
Well, no, I mean, I'm just
has
saying,
that ever worked?
If she's the kind of person who will respond well to that, you could say like, oh, well, I read this article. And then maybe see if that will work. I don't know. Not everyone's mom will respond well to that.
You can even start with, I was so excited when I got your present. And then today, I was going online to see how to start it. And then this happened. So it sounds like you and I, together, sensible people, thought this would be great. And then information was presented. And now I would like to know how you feel about this. And then just don't do it. I did it. It was great. I don't care who has my information.
Yeah, I mean...
But you should.
Yeah, I think, and I'm going to just, you know, because I'm on the farthest, like, side of the thing, I'll also be on the farthest. Just like, no, I don't want to give my genetic information to a company that sells it to other places. I don't want to do this. I'm so glad that you were thinking of me. This does not sound like fun. I would not have fun doing it. It would make me feel anxious. I don't want to. And, you know, you can couch that in however you normally talk to your mom. But I think that's a totally appropriate thing to just say, like, I'm glad that you thought it would be fun. You guessed wrong.
Also, you can give the kit very easily to other people.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't know who you are yet.
Yeah, make those suckers give their information to the government. They've already got the little FBI guy watching on their camera on the
They
computer.
Already have all your information.
It is.
Don't be so precious.
As the Simpsons
genes.
Taught us, if you've ever handled a penny, the government has your DNA. Why do you think they keep them in circulation? If anyone would like a genetic testing kit and does not share this person's privacy concerns, please come see us after the show. And we will give it to you. Do you have it with you? Well, we'll facilitate an exchange. You can give it to us and then we'll pass it along.
You do have a great blazer.
Very good glasses, too.
We should take some more questions. I saw your hand up before, and then justice compels me to give you the microphone. You know when you make eye contact, and you're like, I have to say you now?
So, just so you know, the family I grew up in is kind of a mess. I hang out in R raised by narcissists on Reddit. So, when I got married, my brother asked me if he was going to be my best man like 3 or 4 times in a row. Basically because of like weaponized anxiety from my mother. Around how we were planning our wedding. And I, for the longest time, have planned when he gets married to ask him if I'm going to be his best man like 3 or 4 times. But as I've like gotten older and matured, I'm starting to have some doubts. And I just thought I would ask you guys if really I should listen to those doubts and put away this revenge fantasy. Sounds like I should.
Let's do this silently. Just don't do it. No elaboration necessary. It will not produce joy in your life.
I understand. Thank you.
I love you. I bless you. Good
the
luck.
The impulse
in your life.
Is a very logical.
Also, do you really like the thing is?
No, he just wants to bother his brother.
He might say yes, and then and then you'll have to do it.
I really want to do it. I just want to give him a hard time first.
No. Never works out. I had a letter just like this from some sisters a while back about cats and IVF, and it went so badly. It went so badly, you guys. Learn from those sisters who have made each other suffer in such inventive ways. Next question, please.
All right. I could use some advice on dueling mother and mother-in-laws around visitation.
We have produced the first grandchild on both sides. Neither family is nearby, and it seems that as soon as one knows that there's a visit happening, immediately tickets are booked for the next visit, and they're like keeping score on how many days and who's around when, and it's horrible.
So you definitely need an information diet situation, because there is no reason that your mom needs to know when your mother-in-law is visiting and vice versa. Which
but
could
pictures
be.
What if they're Facebook? All friends on Facebook?
Facebook. See? But just you can just also say very vague things like, "I'll have to check," or "I will get back to you," or "the baby's on fire."
Do they stay with you when they come?
Yes and no.
Do they book tickets without confirming with you first?
There was a text chain this week with my in-laws and my husband, and the general practice is I don't participate and they deal with it. And then I checked back in and tickets had been booked.
No. So that's...
Thank you all.
The one problem with that strategy is that you and your husband don't get on the same page before he deals with them. It sounds like you're like, just handle it, honey, and then he handles it in a way you don't like.
Yeah.
So I think the number one thing, right, is to like, you and the husband have the conversation of like, all right, how many times this year do we want each parent to visit? And the answer, by the way, could be none. Absolutely reasonable to say, we want a year where you don't come visit us. Maybe we'll come see you. Maybe we won't. Like, it is okay to, like, get that number down. And then armed with that knowledge and prepared that they may not like it, that's fine. They will live. They will thrive. You know, then you guys can say, do not book a ticket until we say, great. And, talk about it with your husband first.
Also, I think blocking just entire months out on your calendar and saying, sorry, we cannot do a visit then, and not giving a reason why.
That doesn't work for us. Power move.
Is your most important thing to do.
All right, we have time for one or two more. So, you know, somebody in this area with a great one. You seem very enthusiastic. I'll just, again, point at you. I'm so sorry. I should have come up with a better strategy. The microphone people are fantastic.
Hi there. This is a friendship-related question. I have a really, really close friend who went through probably the worst year of her life to date last year, including a breakup of a six-year relationship, parents divorcing, and a couple of other hard things. She does not like feelings and has said this many times that she wants to avoid talking about feelings. I grew up with a therapist parent and am very used to feelings, and this feels like the opposite of what might be helpful for her. And so she's talking about, you know, going on benders and doing some things. And I feel like I'm constantly providing the contrarian view and I don't like being a downer. I'd rather just be supportive. So I'm curious, do you have any advice for how a friend might address this with their buddy? And, just any thoughts?
Carefully, for sure.
Yeah.
I think there's kind of one style of advice that I often employ, which is the sort of what is the other person goal, the other person's goals here. And your friend has very clearly stated that her goal is to not talk or think too much about the negative feelings she's experiencing, which no one ever says that about joy, by the way. Hmm. No one's ever like, I don't want to think too much about joy. So, you know, there would be the one kind of school of thought that it's like, nothing, take her at her word, just talk to her about the weather or sports or your feelings. And then that's all. And some of that I think is true. Like, I don't think it's a good idea to like push at it constantly, or to like bring it up repeatedly. But on the other hand, when it's a close friend, when it's someone that you've known really well, when there's a sense of intimacy and mutual trust, and like, as long as you kind of have a clear sense that you do respect their boundaries when they like really make things clear, I think within those confines, it's not as if you're like a stranger on the street disrespecting the way someone's chosen to live their life. If you say to your friend, I love you, I'm a little nervous that when you say you don't want to talk or think about your feelings, you kind of then clearly do things that are as a result of those feelings, like big old benders or whatever, which I get it. Sometimes they help, but, you know, I just want to name this at least once. And I just want you to know, if you ever want to talk about these feelings with me, you can. I know sometimes it feels like if I think about these feelings, they will be so big, they will swallow me whole. And I'm just here to like, you know, be supportive of you and to just remind you that like feelings sometimes feel like they're going to be fatal. Every time I have a feeling, I'm convinced it is the feeling that will kill me. It's going to be the one that takes me out.
You're going to have it for the rest of your life. That same feeling.
Life. Yep. Yeah. It's just this, you know, it is my ghost of Christmas past, just following me around. So I can really relate to that. But I think, yeah, having, you know, kind of at least one conversation where you just kind of make it clear, I understand your strategy. And if that's just how you're going to get through the sort of immediate aftermath of all this stuff, I get it. But, I think at some point you'll want to do something different, and I'll always be here if you do. Do you guys have anything stronger to say?
Jasmine's parents are both therapists, which is why I'm moving myself over.
I understand how it is to grow up with therapist parents. I would say that you don't want your friend to think, though, that whenever she talks to you, you're going to be like, so, how are you feeling today? Right. So, you know, have that speech about, like, I'm always here for you if you want to talk about anything. But also, can we go see a movie? Or, you know, try to hang out with her in non-feelings kind of discussion ways so that, like, she can relax and hang out some. And then if you're worried about some of the things that she's doing, then you can say, like, I just worry about you. I want you to be okay. Just know that I always care about you. And then, you know, leave it there. And maybe someday she'll want to talk about her feelings. She probably will. It'll just take a while.
And I think that's a good balance, too, between, like, not trying to have a big cathartic moment and then also not necessarily, like, being her, like, Louise to the Thelma on the bender. Like, if it makes you nervous to be with her, like, if you worry when she's doing the, like, kind of bigger things to not deal with her feelings, like, it is not, like, unkind or unfriendly of you to say, like, I'm going to leave on hour 6 of the bender. Take care of yourself. Like, you know, you don't have to go, like, if she's like, let's go to Vegas and not feel anything, you can say, like, no, I have work. Because I do get that. Like, when you really care about someone and you feel like they're going through a rough time, part of you feels like, I have to really up my caretaking game. And I think, you know, you can increase the sort of vocal support you offer. You can periodically try to spend some more, like, neutral time together. But you do not have to, like, ratchet up your level of worrying about her to meet the, like, bad stuff she's experienced. Because if you do that, you're going to be panicked for a while of just, like, is she okay? How is she today? How's the grief today? What's the level of the grief? What's the temperature of the grief? Have I measured the grief recently? What have I done to ameliorate the grief? And I say that as someone who often does that. Like, if someone I care about is hurting, I'm immediately like, what are we going to do to stop it? And sometimes the answer is, like, be honest, be truthful, be loving, be supportive, and then go do something else. Because you cannot...
Sometimes it's just like sitting on the couch and watching the Great British Baking Show for like 5 hours in a row, which is great. I recommend that to everyone.
But you can pause it and talk about your feelings. Like, that's the thing that I don't get is I'm just like, feelings are the best thing to talk about. That's all I talk about. But I'm not everyone. All right. I think we should stop because my producer just gave me a face that seemed like a stopping face. Guys, this was the greatest hour and a half of my life. Before we leave the people, these beautiful people who came out on a Thursday night to see us, do you guys have any parting thoughts, any approaches to advice giving, any general pieces of advice that you would like to give everyone while you have a captive audience?
If you go to France, bring your own toilet paper.
Also, they don't eat peanut butter in the UK.
So, Mallory...
Now I have to come up with advice. Find friends like these. Aww,
that's so cute. I'm so better. Charming.
Thank you so much for coming. The show is over.
Jasmine's book comes out on Tuesday. It's called The Wedding Date.
Oh, yeah.
I'll be live tweeting.
Thanks for listening to Dear Prudence. Our producer is Max Jacobs. Our theme music was composed by Robin Hilton. Special thanks to Faith Smith from Slate Live and all the great folks at the Brava Theater in San Francisco for making this live show possible. Don't miss an episode of the show. Head to slate.com/dearprudence to subscribe. And remember, you can always hear more Prudence by joining Slate Plus. Go to slate.com/plus to sign up. If you want me to answer your question, call me and leave a message at 401-371-DEAR, that's 3327, and you might hear your answer on an episode of the show. You don't have to use your real name or location, and at your request, we can even alter the sound of your voice. Keep it short, 30 seconds, a minute, tops. We'll see you next week. If you're looking for something else from Slate, check out If Then. If Then is a podcast about technology, society, and power. Each week, Slate's April Glazer and Willa Remus take you on a lively tour of the tech news that actually matters, from fake news in your Facebook feed, to the algorithms that want your job, to the Uber drivers who want a job with benefits. With news-making interviews of key tech industry figures, fascinating academics, and top tech journalists, they explore not only how the technology that's shaping our world works, but the ideas, ideologies, incentives, and biases that underlie it. New shows are out every Wednesday, so please give a listen to If Then and subscribe.